Blog Talk Radio.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy. It won't be long. Healing rain is coming down. It's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus' name.
Good morning, Internet world, and welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. I want to thank everyone for coming today. Hi to Mary in the chat room and my other guests. It is Tuesday, November 11th, a day that we take time to honor our very special veterans who have, in some cases, given their lives for our freedom. And I say this because my dad served in World War II under General Patton in the Battle of the Bulge. I will never forget the hard, disciplined work of our veterans who have paved the way for the nation that we are today. We cannot and should not ever, ever forget them. And so I want to say happy Veterans Day. You know exactly who you are. You men and women who are so courageous and so valiant to step up to the plate and give your lives for our freedom. We love you and remember you on this very, very special Veterans Day. Well, I started Sunday night by posting my new book on Twitter, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran, and I was amazed. I was at work when I did this. I was amazed at the response that I got, and I'm still getting. It's like a Twitter storm has evolved from this little powerful book about my dear Iranian friends who suffer under the Islamic Republic. And I'm so grateful that this Twitter storm for my book is continuing now. The response is really amazing. It's all about them. It is their book. And so thank you, whoever you are out there in Twitter land, thank you so much for responding in such a positive way about my newest book. Well, just a half an hour program today, but I want to get right to the topic. I want to talk again a little bit more about this secret letter that Obama sent to the Supreme Leader of Iran. It is shameful and disgraceful for us to sit partnering at the table with those who sponsor terrorism all over the world. We're going to ask them to cooperate with us to fight against ISIS. Are you kidding me? They're the grandfather of ISIS. But I want to get right to the subject today. Just a couple of days ago, Colonel Ralph Peters was on the Sean Hannity Show, and he had this insightful words to say about this secret letter. So let's listen.
Cooperation regarding ISIS was contingent on a nuclear deal. Now, the White House press secretary, Josh Earnest, was pressed about his pen pal correspondence earlier today.
I'm not in a position to discuss private correspondence between the president and any world leader. I can tell you that the policy that the president and his administration have articulated about Iran remains unchanged.
All right, here to tell us what this communication really means, Fox News strategic analyst, Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. Colonel, this is quite disturbing to me that there would be a quid pro quo. Oh, we want you to align with us with ISIS. That'll impact your ability to pursue nuclear technology and potentially weaponness?
Well, this president is much more comfortable in secret relations with the Iranians or with Putin than he is with leveling with the American people. But sending this secret letter, this begging letter to the supreme leader of Iran was not only an act of ferocious stupidity, but an act of terrible treachery. It will be read rightly as a betrayal by every single ally we have in the greater Middle East, from Israel to Saudi Arabia. It was stupid because it plays into the hands of the Islamic State and Jabhat al-Nusra and al-Qaeda, all these Sunni organizations. Iranians are Shia. They will be able to say, look, America, the United States, the great Satan, they're siding with the Shia heretics, the devils against us. It potentially would spark an even greater religious war than we've already seen in the Middle East. Worse, it plays into the Iranian hands by weakening our bargaining position on the nuke deal. It's basically saying, Iran, we need your help. We're helpless. We Americans, we need you. Also, why do Iran's dirty work for them? Iran owns the Baghdad government that Obama keeps praising and saying he's going to rely on. It owns them. Why are we helping Shias kill Sunni? Use common sense, damn it. If you want to fight Sunni terrorists, a vast movement of Sunnis, you need Sunni allies like the Saudis.
The idea that this president is having such a hard time identifying who the enemy is here is really, really frightening to me. Yeah, ferociously stupid was, I think, the line you used.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary. All right, Colonel.
These guys, they don't think anything through, ever.
They really don't. Scary. All right, we're going to watch that closely. One good news that came out of the election: the Iranians are afraid of the Republicans that won on Tuesday. That's interesting. Now, coming up next tonight, despite Tuesday's landslide GOP victory, the president remains defiant.
And that was Colonel Ralph Peterson on the Sean Hannity program just a couple of days ago. This has been the fourth letter sent to Khamenei. And I agree with Ralph. It is deplorable. I want to quote to you from a very important letter written by Struan Stevenson from the European Iraqi Freedom Association, EIFA. He has some insightful words that can add to what you just heard. I want you to hear this carefully, because, and the reason I'm taking the time to read this today is because just in about 2 weeks we are going to sit down at the bargaining table with Iran over the nuclear situation. And I'm livid about this, because we are cooperating with terrorists. We should be sitting down at the table demanding the release of Saeed Abedini, demanding the release of Amir Hekmati, and not bargaining with terrorists. We don't bargain. We don't reason with this. We demand from them. And so I'm praying for my dear friend Nagma that Saeed will be returned to his family very soon. Do you know his two children having a Bible study? I'm talking about Rebecca and Jacob. Rebecca just came out to her mom and said, I miss my daddy. Is he ever going to come home? Will I ever see him again? I'm afraid I never will see him again. This is so painful, and we have to do everything we can. Bombard the White House with postcards, whatever it takes to get the attention of our president to make him and Amir a priority. This has to be about human rights and not about nuclear rights. But on to this letter by Struan Stevenson about this situation. He says, continuing to follow the widely disparaged policy of engagement and appeasement with the brutal leader of a theocratic state is a major mistake. Iranian meddling in Syria and Iraq and Khamenei's brand of Islamic fundamentalism lie at the root, at the rise of ISIS. Iran has provided money, arms, and military personnel to back the former brutal sectarian Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and the terrorist Shia militias in Iraq. Iran has also given its full support to Bashar al-Assad in Syria, prolonging the bloody civil war and costing the lives of hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children. Iran has been the main part of the problem. It's creating unrest and exporting fundamentalism and terrorism in the Middle East. Struan goes on to write, after 6 years, Mr. Obama is still mistakenly extending a hand of friendship to a regime which was responsible for the execution of over 120,000 political prisoners and recently executed a young girl, of course you know, Rahana Jabari, after 7.5 years in prison for defending herself against a rape. The Iranian government has condoned a recent spate of acid attacks on women for malveiling, that is, not veiling enough. leading to dozens of young women being permanently disfigured and blinded. The supposedly moderate regime of President Rouhani has executed more people than even his predecessor, Ahmadinejad, imposing an atmosphere of fear and terror throughout the country. Last week, they even sentenced a young British girl to a year in prison for watching a volleyball match. To give concessions to such a regime under the pretext of fighting ISIS will simply exacerbate the violence and worsen the crisis, strengthening support for ISIS and other Islamic extremists. It will also pave the way for Iran to become a nuclear power and a threat to world peace. Gruen Stevenson, the European Iraqi Freedom Association, EIFA, some very, very insightful, important words for you and me to consider about these so-called secret letters. Well, this past weekend, I had my monthly time at the hospital where I work the weekend, and I was sitting down at break time, and this story came over the internet on my phone about the dog law in Iran. Now, you know, all of us, I assume all of us are animal rights people, that we love our animals. I have a beautiful 58-pound border collie. Her name is Jezzy. And whenever I Skype with my Iranian friends, they always love to look where the camera is pointing and say, oh, there's Jezzy. They love my dog. And they love to look at her. When I give Jezzy treats, they get excited. These are my Iranian friends. Well, man's best friend suddenly is really not welcome in Iran. Now, of course, there's been laws before, but there is a new law I want you to hear about, the punishment for owning an animal in Iran and for walking your animal. I want you to hear this right now on the cross in the desert.
Being a dog owner is something many people take pride in and enjoy. In Iran, however, the role of caring for a dog can come at a price. Lawmakers are reportedly attempting to pass a bill that will fine and punish individuals who take a canine out in public or keep them inside their homes. The bill states, anyone who takes a pet like a monkey or dog in public and damages the Islamic culture or the health and tranquility of the people, particularly children and women, will face punishment. The proposed legislation goes on to say that animal lovers cannot keep dogs in private residences or buy and sell them as pets. The punishment comes in the form of 74 lashes. In addition to that, offenders could face a fine of more than $3,700. The pet will be confiscated and transferred to either a desert or zoo. The owner is responsible for not only the transfer fee, but also the cost of the animal's future care.
Now, a lot of you will probably not be shocked. You're going to say, well, look at the way they treat their own people. It doesn't shock me that this is the way they treat animals. Well, but my good friend Shadi Paveh, who is an Iranian human rights activist, before she became involved in the political human rights spectrum, she was a huge, and still is, animal rights person. And she will post on her Facebook page examples of how Iranians treat animals, and it's deplorable. But I wanted to look deeper into this, a little bit deeper, to find out the basis for this treatment. And, of course, it didn't take me very long to find out that the religious aspect of Islam has everything to do with this. And it goes back to really the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad in the Hadith, which is a collection of his statements that was recorded. These are teachings that are not found directly in the Quran. Most Muslims adhere to the Hadith. There are those who try to distance themselves from the Hadith because of the things they teach. One of them is about apostasy. If any man change their religion, kill him, Muhammad is reported to have said. So what about animals? What about dogs? What does the Hadith have to say? Well, I went to Bukhari, Volume 3, several sources that said, whoever keeps a dog, Muhammad says, one kirat of the reward of his good deeds is deducted daily, unless the dog is used for guarding a farm or cattle, unless it is used for hunting, for guarding. Really, what happens is the faithful Muslim will lose a reward of good works because he owns a dog. Also, the keeping of dogs annuls the Muslim prayer. This is from Bukhari, Volume 1, 490. The things which annul the prayers were mentioned before me. They said, prayer is annulled by a dog, a donkey, and a woman, quote, if they pass in front of the praying people. when any of you stands for prayer, and there is a thing before him equal to the back of the saddle that covers him, and in this case that is not before him, equal to the back of the saddle, his prayer would be cut off by the passing of a woman and a black dog. I think the Apostle Paul said, when one of you prays without a stirach, a dog, a pig, a Jew, a magician, and a woman will cut off his prayer. Excuse me for the language that's used in here. Basically, the presence of a dog and a woman annuls the faithful prayer of a Muslim, according to the Hadith. Now, did you know that dogs stop angels? Okay? Here's what it says in Bukhari, Volume 4. I heard Allah's apostle saying, quote, angels of mercy do not enter a house wherein there is a dog or a picture of a living creature. Once Gabriel promised to visit the prophet, but he delayed, and the prophet got worried. At last he came out and found Gabriel and complained to him for his delay. Gabriel said, quote, we do not enter a place in which there is a picture. This is the teachings that most, I would assume, Muslims adhere to. Dogs are unclean. Why are they in Iran at all? Well, I'm not really sure. I know the answer to that, but now there is severe punishment, public lashing of 74 stripes for those that own or walk a dog. It's more and more evidence of how Iran is becoming much more fundamentalist in their teaching and becoming much more like an Islamic state. So man's best friend is not welcome in Iran. And I have to tell that to my Iranian friends when we Skype next time. I'm sure at some point in time they've heard of this new legislation for the severe punishment of owning, walking a dog, etc. It's so very, very sad. Well, I want to continue on now because our time goes by so rapidly. I want to talk about Ganeshe Gavami. This is some good news. The Volleyball Federation is now punishing Iran for banning female fans. This is great. I love the approach they're taking. Now, the International Volleyball Federation said on Sunday it would not allow Iran to host international events as long as women are banned from attending the game. You know, there has been a verdict in Ganeshe's case from her brother Imam posted that she will spend 1 year in Evin prison for attending this men's volleyball game back in June. But here you see worldwide attention, especially the International Volleyball Federation, saying to Iran, look, here are the consequences for what you're doing. If you do this, we're going to do this. You won't host another volleyball game. And so that's going to cut a little bit on their economy at the pocketbook, right? So I really, really think that this is important. Argentina actually has been asked to take over from Iran and organize the 2015 season. And so this is some severe punishments for what they're doing to Ganeshe and to all women all over the world. I am glad that this is happening. I'm so happy to hear that they are taking a tough stand. What I want to do in our remaining time here is I want to spend some time with you, and I want to read from Rahana's prison letters. I heard over the weekend, and by the way, there are pictures on Facebook, Sholi and her husband and family. These are some of the most touching, beautiful, heartbreaking pictures of their special birthday they had for Rahana, which was this past Wednesday, November 5th. Just beautiful. It touches the heart pictures. You have to see it on my Facebook page. But they have decided that they're going to have Rahana's prison letters published up on Amazon, and that they're setting up a charity for Rahana, that the proceeds from the purchase of the book with the prison letters will go to Rahana's fund and charity. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful gesture. And I hope that my book with Rahana's picture on it will bring attention to Rahana all over the world. I'm so encouraged by the response on Twitter about this. I'm very, very glad to do whatever I can to bring attention to Rahana's execution, to talk about how unjust it was, and bring attention to her case. She is really the pride of all Iranian women. She did write over, I think, almost 20 prison letters. Only 10 had been published on the internet. But what I wanted to do this morning was just take a little time from part one of her letters and read her account of when Mr. Sarbandi, Morteza Sarbandi, took her into this dwelling place where he claimed he was going to have her do some interior decorating. I want you to hear in her own words her description of that day that changed her life forever. And so I'm going to take some time to read this. Quote, We entered the building and went up in the lift. Perhaps if we had taken the stairs, I would have seen a pair of shoes outside a door, or noticed a sign that it was a residential building, and I would have heard the alarm bells ringing. Alas, the lift had swallowed all the signs, fifth floor. Next to the lift, there was a door. Dr. Sarbandi opened it with his key, and I was shocked. It was not an office. This was a run-down residential flat filled with dirt and dust, filled with chaos. There was no signs of life, no scent of domestic cooking or brightness of a home. It was a deserted place, table near the door with a few chairs. I sat on one of the chairs nearest to the door. He probed me to make myself comfortable, but I was not comfortable. He probed me to take my headscarf off, but I was afraid. The table was messy with various objects on it. Paper, key, mobile phone, glass, knife stand, flower pot, and the general bric-a-brac. He went behind the table and into the kitchen. My eyes explored the room and drew everything in, near and far, anything and everything, from the entrance door to the television, the sofa, the fan, the console, the mirror, the prayer carpet, and even the small tables. He returned with two glasses of fruit juice and immediately drank one. He complained of the heat and invited me to drink. I was staring at the ice cubes in the glass. They were dancing. I, Rahana Jabari, a 19-year-old girl, did not know at that time that this ball would end up with a ballet of death. Dance following on from crying, bruising, deceit, hypocrisy, conspiracy, and beating and beating and beating, and pain and pain and pain. Yet I ignored my gut instincts. I tried not to think negative thoughts. I told myself this face is not that of a dangerous man, but my throat felt blocked and I could not drink. I said, let's get on with the work first. I got up quickly and inspected the rooms. I looked out of one of the windows, how high it was from the ground. I wondered what would happen if someone fell out of that window. What a useless thought. I drew everything on a piece of paper and took notes. I returned. He immediately turned away from the prayer carpet and walked towards me. The sofa was now covered with a bed sheet. My mind went blank. My mouth dried up and my throat still felt blocked. My eye caught the door. It was closed. I sat on the chair and shuffled my papers. He had come closer. He took out a small packet and showed it to me. Do you know what this is? He asked. I knew. Fear seized my soul. I stood up. I seemed smaller and weaker sitting down. He came forward. I, Rahana Jabari, on that day, was soaked in my sweat, just as I am now at the age of 26, and casting my mind back to what I endured. Even now, as I am dissecting this festering tumor, I am soaking with sweat. From that moment on, I knew that all of my dreams were burning. In a fever that I did not know how to control, I saw the flight of death in that house, the darkness and decay, the smoke, the pain. And now I want to end my old nightmare. I tried to write many times, but I abandoned it unfinished each time, because putting a knife to this old wound is more agonizing. But at this hour of an endless night in Ward 2 of Shah Rahay Prison, under the moonlight, and in the silence of the prison, without any whispers, I spew my pain. I cannot do anything except to tell my story to the patient stone that I know from the legends that I heard in my childhood. If I don't tell, I die. So I will confess my sufferings to the stone until it cannot bear it anymore and bursts. Perhaps then my pain would end. Perhaps then my voice would sing again, the knife. And since then, I pretended to live. I only waited for day to turn to night and for night to turn to day. My soul died. My delicate soul died at the age of 19. I spend many nights with my nightmares, dreaming of the death of animals that I had rescued. The pain of any living thing always hurt me. And all these years, the past 7 years, were filled with sorrow and pain. The sorrows of girls who have had a sad story each, like me. Like Fateka, who I witnessed being hanged, I had learned from these years that death is not a means to end pain. Perhaps it is a new beginning. I, Rahana Jabari, 26 years old, am not scared of death. But Rahana, the 19-year-old, was. You have no way of escaping. The sentence has turned my world black as my hair. The hair that a few months ago began turning white. I don't know if you can hear, tremendously gifted writer Rahana was. She had a way with words. Being an author, writer, I'm listening to what she's saying as I read it. It's very powerful. Rahana was an amazing person, and her words live on. Her story lives on. Her cause lives on. I'm so grateful for Sholi and her family taking these letters and doing the absolute right thing, putting them in a book better than anything I could do, putting them in a book, sending it out all over the world that everyone will read what Rahana suffered through. I'm very grateful for their action, and I support that. And I'm very grateful to hear that they are going to do this very, very soon. In my preface to my new book, I wrote, "This book is dedicated to the beautiful soul of Rahana Jabari, a 26-year-old suffering martyr who was unjustly executed on October 25, 2014, in Tehran for the crime of self-defense. Rahana was the victim of an unjust and cruel government who punishes and executes women for defending themselves against rape attacks. For over 7 years in prison, Rahana endured torture and endless hours of interrogations at the hands of barbaric men. Yet during those terrible years of pain, humiliation, and suffering, Rahana wrote more than 10 prison letters defending herself. In the first letter, Rahana writes, quote, "Perhaps someone in this world will hear my cries and feel my pain. I have heard your cries, dear Rahana, and I have felt the burden of your intense pain. I will never forget your suffering, and I will tell the world the truth about your unjust and cruel execution." Just 10 days before her 27th birthday, Rahana stepped into the arms of a loving God. The cruel Iranian regime can no longer touch or hurt her. She is finally free. That's the preface, the dedication to my new book, which contains two special stories about Rahana. The rest of the stories are about my Iranian friends and blogs that I have written. I truly hope you will take the time to read this book. I truly hope that you will to reflect, to connect, and to pray for my Iranian friends that suffer so much behind the iron curtain of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I want to thank you so much for the time that you've spent with me this morning. We've talked about the secret letter. We've talked about the cruel new dog law in Iran, and we've talked about Rahana's prison letters. I just ask and pray that you will come to my Facebook page. You will see stories, and at times you will see petitions. Please get involved and be a voice for my dear Iranian friends. They need your prayers and your support all of the time. I will see you on next Monday when I'll have as my guest Saba, my Muslim friend, reporting on human rights violations and honor killings in the Muslim world. I will see you then on the next Cross in the Desert. God bless you, and have yourself an incredible rest of the week. Healing.